You are listening to Salty Believer Unscripted, a conversation on Christian ministry and the Christian life.
This is Salty Believer Unscripted. I'm Josiah Walker.
I'm Brian Catherman.
And on today's episode, we're continuing our study going through the book of Revelation. And we've been looking at the possible chiasm here, right?
Right. Hey, so you're working in Isaiah 53 that bleeds into 52. Help us, remind us again what a chiasm is.
Sure.
Can you see one there?
Yeah, there's a chiasm there at the end of 52 and all of 53, where they kind of got, he's got two different points there.
With so what's a chiasm? That's what I'm getting at. And then lead us into that with Isaiah.
That is just the core of Hebrew poetry.
Okay.
So it's kind of like that arrow, if you were to think of it, is a lot of times how people write it in commentaries, where the main focus point is in the center, and then you build out from there.
In both directions.
In both directions.
So kind like
birds flying in the sky, right?
So like formation. The man was bald.
Yep.
And the man was short, and the man was unattractive, and tall he was not, and hair he had not. Would that be a chiasm?
Maybe. I don't know. I think you're stretching it.
Okay. I got A and bald and tall. Okay, so we're arguing.
I just
want to
know you threw unattractive in there.
because that was the main point.
Oh,
The middle point was unattractive.
I think you misinterpreted the Greek on that one.
I just made it up. So you see that, though. You see that in Isaiah 52 and 53. So walk us through that just really briefly like I just did. But
yeah, so on the outside, it kind of shows the servant's success, talking about Jesus.
It's like A and then A1 or
A
whatever.
A and A1 is both about the servant's success. And then B1 and B2 is about his suffering and how he suffered for us. And then the main point in the center is the servant's significance.
Okay.
Significance of it all.
So. Fantastic. And that being like A and sub A is at the end. So it's like A is at the beginning, sub A is at the very end.
A, B, the center point, and then B1 and then A1.
Nice. Okay. That's all complicated if you don't really have any experience with it. But as you start to have experience, you go, okay. So and we're talking about it because in the previous podcast, we said this might be.
There could be one.
A chiasm here with the seven letters, with the Church of Thyatira being the middle.
Right.
We haven't heard from Dr. Hamilton, who's the chiasm guru.
Have we even released that episode yet?
I think so. I don't know. But
so he might have listened.
He hasn't called.
Right.
today, what are we looking at?
Moving in the section, we're going to look at the letter to Smyrna and the letter to Philadelphia.
Okay, so the outer parts we looked at last time was Ephesus and Laodicea.
Yep.
So we're moving in a layer.
Yep.
And it's a letter to Smyrna. Yep. Let's see here. So that's Revelation 2, 8 through 11.
Yep.
And then the letter to Philadelphia,
which
is Revelation 3, 7 through 13. So now, if we were a sophisticated podcast, we'd say, why don't you pause?
Yeah.
Go read that for yourself. Sure. See if you see the similarities. But we're unscripted. We're not very sophisticated. So you know nobody's going to pause and do that, right?
I think our audience lives an unscripted life, too.
They're probably commuting in their car or something.
Yeah. Okay. So you can't really stop. So you'll just have to keep driving while I read aloud.
Okay, so here's what... Yeah, there you go. So here's what I think we should do. Why don't you do... Start doing Smyrna.
Yeah.
And then I'll say, whoa, stop. And then I'll read something and we'll see where the similarities... So read your chapter 2, verse 8, and I'll be starting in chapter 3, verse 7.
Sweet. Chapter 2, verse 8 says, write to the angel of the church in Smyrna. Thus says the first and the last, the one who was dead and came to life.
Write to the angel in the church of Philadelphia. Thus says the Holy One, the true one, the one who has the key of David, who opens and no one will close, who closes and no one opens. So we can come back to some of that.
So we talked before how each one of these has a picture of Christ from the vision Lord.
From the beginning.
From that vision,
So.
So
yours is the first and the last. Yep. It has a lot to do with probably the eternal, that one. The one who was dead and came to life. This one he's pulling from the Holy One, the true one. The one who has the key of David is like, that comes out of, I can't remember exactly where it's, I want to say it's in Daniel, but it's probably in Isaiah. I know there's a lot of Daniel and Isaiah being quoted here, but it's like he's got the key to Jerusalem, the one who opens and no one will close, the one who closes and no one opens, which has a lot to do with going in and out of the city or giving authority to the new heavens and the new earth and the dead. So let's keep going. Let's see what we see here.
Sounds great. Verse 9 says, I know your affliction and poverty, but you are rich. I know the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan.
Whoa. So the synagogue of Satan I know comes up. My text is a little longer, but I know your works. Look, I have placed before you an open door that no one can close because you have but little power. Yet you have kept my word and not denied my name, which I think you're going to see some denying. Then he has this in the letter to Philadelphia. Note this. I will make those from the synagogue of Satan. Ooh. So there's a very interesting term that's paralleled. Yeah. Who claim to be Jews and are not, but are lying, I will make them come down and bow at your feet, and they will know that I have loved you. And then where do you have with your synagogue of Satan stuff here?
Yeah.
You go.
So, I know the signer of those who say they're Jews and not, but the synagogue of Satan.
Okay, then where does it go from there?
So then verse 10 says, don't be afraid of what you are about to suffer. Look, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison to test you, and you will experience affliction for 10 days. Be faithful to the point of death, and I will give you the crown of life.
So I do know that there's a crown mentioned in this letter as well. So I think the crown and the crown are corresponding to each other. But so over here, because you have kept my command to endure, I will always also keep you from the hour of testing. So you just had a testing piece for 10 days. Here's an hour of testing. And it says this that is going to come on the whole world to test those who live on the earth. I'm going to read 11. I am coming soon. Hold on to what you have so that no one takes your crown. Right. So you have a testing, you have a crown, you have a synagogue of Satan. Let's keep going. What do you got at the very end there?
Well, yeah, because I think you've got a couple more verses than I do.
Well, let me read mine then.
Yeah.
The one who conquers, I will make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he will never go out again, which has a lot to do with the coming in and out of the new heavens and the new earth, or the city and the doors that are open and closed. Yeah. I will write on him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and my new name. Then finally it says, let anyone who has ears listen to what the Spirit says to the churches.
And then I just have verse 11, let anyone who has ears to hear listen to what the Spirit says to the churches. The one who conquers will never be harmed by the second death.
So the one there in the end of your verse, in verse 11, the one who conquers will never be harmed by the second death will basically be in the new heavens and the new earth, in the city of Jerusalem. So the one who's allowing one to come in and go out, I guess, is there. Did you have something about denying the name? You have Jews, you have those who are Jews who are not.
Right.
I have the same thing. They say they're Jews, but they are lying. Did you have something about denying the name or something with the testing in the text you had?
Not this one, no.
Okay, I'm just looking for some. I'm trying to figure out the possible correspondence here. I did find that that some of the people that were arguing, and I could probably look it up in some commentary, for the chiasm were also saying it has to do with the state and health of the church.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, Ephesus has been around for a certain amount of time, and Laodicea, which that's the outer edges, and Ephesus was doing really probably better as a, and Laodicea actually had nothing good to be said about it.
Right.
And then when we move in a layer to Smyrna and Philadelphia, it's becoming possibly like maybe less established as a church. And these are kind of a weaker thing. You know what I'm wrestling with here? I know why we're struggling. I know why you have to record this. Let's see here. I know we have to get Jim Hamilton here. That's what I was going to say. Like, okay. I know why we need to get some help. Is because this is massive chunks of imagery.
Sure.
And so I think when I think of a chiasm like the one you explained,
right,
like my example, it was like a one-to-one correspondence with little clauses.
Yeah. Right.
And as I'm looking at this, I'm like, it's hard to correspond these, but I do see the crown, the synagogue of Satan, the Jews that say they're liars, and the testing.
Yeah.
So when you look at this in really big pieces, like, okay, I see it. And then when you go to, so then from here to go to Pergamum and Sardis, which I don't know if those are like, I don't know. We probably should go to a lot more commentary, but I'm trying to see if I can see the chiasm without all that stuff.
Right.
Because if it really is supposed to be a chiasm, maybe we should be seeing that. But maybe when we get to Thyatira, that'll be a big deal.
Or it might not. It just might not be there.
It just might not be one. So let's do this. In Smyrna, what was going on?
Well, man, it doesn't sound good. So it opens with Jesus talking about how he's the first and the last, right? The one who's dead and came to life. Says, I know your affliction and your poverty, but you're rich. So they're obviously struggling.
Yeah.
But he's saying, hey, you're rich in ways you don't even realize, right? I know the slander of those who say they're Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan.
Yeah, that's a serious... They're a part of a false church, basically.
Man, God help that church. But don't be afraid of what you're about to suffer. So obviously, even though they're dealing with affliction and poverty, it looks like there's maybe worse stuff coming or more coming. Look, the devil's about to throw some of you into prison to test you, and you will experience affliction for 10 days. Be faithful to the point of death, and I will give you the crown of life. Anyone who has ears to hear here, the one who conquers will never be harmed by the second death. So that doesn't sound good.
No, that's rough.
Because it said, hey, I know things are hard, they're about to get harder, and you're going to die.
Which is interesting because in the letter to Laodicea, here's Jesus, the one who can open and close the doors. I have placed before you an open door, which is great. You've kept my word. Go through it. Note, I will make those from the synagogue of Satan who claim to be Jews and are not but are lying, I will make them come down and bow at your feet, and they will know that I have loved you. And that's just really a picture of like how much Jesus loves his true believers, his people. Because you have also, because you know that I have, oh man, I've lost my place. 10. Because you have kept my command to endure, which do you have something? No, you have the conquered. Okay.
Yeah.
I will also keep you from the hour of testing, which there's that testing in, that is going to come on the whole world to test those who live on the earth. Some will argue that that's possibly they're going to be saved in this sort of rapture thing. I don't go there personally. I think the elect should be preserved through the testing, much like the preserved through the 10-day testing.
Yeah.
Over here on the other side, and that's why there's that. I'm coming soon. Hold on to what you have so that no one takes your crown. And kind of a picture of this isn't good. There's a lot going on, but I'm going to sustain you through this. He doesn't say, look, you're going to be tested even to the point of death or anything like that. To the one who conquers, I will make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he will never go out again. I don't know. I'm getting to the point where I thought I saw a strong chiasm here. I go back and forth on this. Let me ask you this, though. Do you think, so there are some who will read this purely as a futuristic, all of this right. is supposed to take place at a future point, not from the original audience, but a future point from the reader today.
Right.
Okay, have you heard that before? Like yeah. all of this is going to yep. be someday in the future, right. what will happen? Well, so here's where I struggle. Clearly, there's a, this is what's going to happen to the church in Smyrna, the church sure. in Philadelphia, from the future from where they're at.
Right.
But it seems likely to me yeah. that that's happened.
Yep.
And because some of these churches don't exist anymore.
I mean, our brothers and sisters in Smyrna, something tells me they dealt with some affliction.
Right.
About well, 10 days.
Laodicea doesn't even, I mean, there's not a church, there's not a town yeah. there. Like, no. So this seems like it was future for them, but past for us.
Absolutely.
Right.
But there's some future here you could read. Feels a little bit like eisegesis, but you know, those who conquer will never be harmed by the second death. That's still a biblical truth today.
I think those are principles that are applied, right. but the little specifics, maybe it's a pattern.
Right.
Pattern of stuff that's coming along.
So, do we experience affliction in this life now? Yes.
Sure.
You know.
Do we still need to hold on and conquer yeah. and never be harmed by the second death?
Is there still
death?
A crown of life for us? Absolutely.
Is there a synagogue of Satan?
Oh, yeah. A few of them in our town. But this is some powerful stuff that was going on right then, you know, for that moment in history.
All right, so as we keep working our way in, and we look at that, if this is indeed what's going on, which some people are probably just losing their mind because we're not going linear, but if we keep doing that, then what should be happening is we're being directed to the main focal point, which would be in Thyatira's letter. If indeed this sort of thing is a chiasm and we're looking at it. And if it's not, then we'll still look at those things appropriately and then move on to chapter 4 eventually.
Well, now tell me, you asked me a question. Let me ask you a question.
Fine, yep.
The letter to Philadelphia,
yeah.
verse 10, says, because you have kept my command to endure, I will also keep you from the hour of testing that is going to come on the whole world to test those who live on the earth. So, is that for today? Is that like a pre-trib rapture text?
Thing. Well, so here's what, because you have kept my command to endure, so something they had done, I will, that's past tense, you have kept my command, then, yep. I will also keep from you the hour of testing that is future tense, going to come on the world to test all those who live on the earth. If these other churches were having things happen to those original readers,
mm-hmm.
then this is possibly something that happened to the original readers as well. That makes sense. If the principle is, well, God, for those who are faithful, God will protect them from trials.
Right.
I don't think that particular principle lines up well with all the other trials that we're seeing.
Sure.
He didn't save the people in Smyrna from the trial. He helped them to endure through it. He didn't save Judah and Jerusalem, you know, when enemies were sacking them from the trials. He didn't save them from the Babylonian exile. Yeah. The Exodus. He didn't helped people endure through the suffering and the trials. Peter and James talking about trials that come upon you and suffering. Yeah. Jesus will carry you through those things. Yeah. He will persevere. Paul through Acts going through all these things. He wasn't lifted out of all those. He was preserved, protected, and carried through them. And so I think the principle here would be not I'm faithful. I don't have to deal with testing.
Right.
Now, maybe some would say, well, is this hour of testing the Great Tribulation?
Sure.
I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think this is the final end tribulation type thing. I think this is something that was hard. And people go, well, has there ever been some trial that's landed on the whole world? I can think of one.
Yeah?
We had a global pandemic.
We did.
World War II seemed to really have a huge impact on the whole world. World War I seemed to, maybe not some of the...
How about
places,
the Great Depression,
I mean, we've had some major issues that have in the most last 200 years. Yeah. So is it possible that in the Roman Empire, and in this, that maybe that was in reference to something then, but the principle is still God. I guess the issue here is he kept them from the hour of testing. Might not necessarily mean he kept them out of and extracted them,
right,
but persevered them through it.
Yeah.
Right? So... it could go that way. That being said, it might be also that it is, hey, I'm going to pull you completely out and this whole testing is going to miss you. I don't know if any country did not have COVID in one way or another impact their country, but maybe there was one.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I would kind of hold that to they probably had that coming to them because there's a past tense reference. Because you have kept, not for all those who will keep, then I will... this. So I think it has to do absolutely with the original audience, and then there's a principle that we can learn from it.
100%.
So I don't think this is speaking of the Great Tribulation.
Okay.
Have you been reading? You've been reading through Revelation some?
Yeah.
Since we've been kind of talking about
it. Yeah.
Are you finding that it gets easier for you the more you read it?
Absolutely.
Is that happening for you?
Well, and I feel like I'm reading it for the first time because this is the first time I think I've put aside my preconceived notions and ideas concerning Revelation and really just tried to look at it with a blank slate.
So like, what is it saying?
Right. Actually saying? It's been really helpful because I feel like I'm seeing things I've never even seen before. Just like you talked about with seeing things for the original audience. I think I've been too quick to jump to, well, what does that mean for today? What does that mean for the future?
What does that mean for me right now in this moment? Well, so it's interesting you say that because when we get to chapters 4 and 5, so Robbie, the intern, who's on the other side of the microphone, he is going to be preaching Revelation 4. And he comes to me and he's like, oh my goodness. So what we kind of determined was it looks like this is a new vision that's getting started.
Right.
So you have this part with the letters and then you have this new vision. After this, I looked up to heaven, you know, and he kind of goes into, it's a new vision. And he gets really excited. He's like, this really fits together with chapter 5, the Lamb that's worthy to take the scroll. And he wants to get to all that stuff. And I remember just asking him as we're talking about it, I said, man, that is awesome. So if we just want to jump to the Lamb, what's the point of chapter 4, verse 1, all the way through? There's 11 verses there for a reason.
Right.
But our preconceived stuff is get to this other thing.
Right.
And he,
get to the meat.
As soon as he pulled back and started working through it, he was like, wow, there's actually a lot here. That before any of this is happening, there's an act of worship going on in the throne. And I said, okay, that's, you know, we talked about it.
Yeah.
Okay, now, how does all that play out like when you pull back and you think about this without your preconceived notions, and then you start noticing that these letters are all giving us a picture of that first vision with Jesus caring. It's been really good. I think the more I've been in it, and I haven't been in it, you know, as much as I'd even like to be, it's sort of opening up more. So I think what I'm realizing with Revelation is it's almost one of those books that you have to say, I'm going to read this book 3 or 4 times this month.
Right.
I'm going to add it into my devotional reading. I'm going to read it in these big chunks. I'm going to maybe sit down and read it in one reading, but then in a few days I'm going to do that again. Which, and it just seems to it's just coming alive. I mean, it is alive, but it's the blinders on my eyes are coming off, right. And the preconceived ideas are starting to break apart. It's Absolutely. Been really good.
Because that's one of the hard things with trying to see if whether there's a chiasm here across a couple chapters versus the one on Isaiah is there's a lot here.
Yeah.
So reading big chunks at a time, reading the whole book, listening to the whole book at one time.
Even seeing a chiasm or even seeing structure, those things get easier the more you practice it.
Right.
And the more you read it, sure. And the more you work in it. And I don't think a lot of times we push ourselves to go, hey, is there a structure here?
Yeah.
Is there something to be seen here? We don't dig in and do the hard work.
Right.
Because maybe we're not recording a podcast on it, or because we're just reading so lightly, devotionally,
right.
We don't stop and go, man, what is really here? What is Jesus trying to answer for me?
Right.
So I'm excited about that. So next week we're going to, let's see, what is it? Go ahead.
So we got the Letter to Pergamum.
Yep.
Combined with the Letter to Sardis.
And those are the outer edges of the Letter to Thyatira. So we're dialing in here.
Coming in. So
okay, I want to encourage the listeners to go read these seven letters. Maybe just read them all in one setting.
Yeah.
Maybe read them in a different order to see if that change. I don't know. Let's just get your hands dirty and dig in and see what just sort of jumps out at you, because it's good to study the Word of God.
Absolutely.
And I think it can be really joyful.
Right.
It can be insightful. And by the way, if you're reading this and you're terrified, you're not reading it correctly, because it's supposed to be comforting.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be informing us of these wonderful things that allow us to live well for Jesus now in light of the final culmination of all these things in the Bible.
Absolutely. So
that's sort of my challenge.
Right? Because in the end, when we know hard times are coming, the Bible prepares us for that suffering.
Yeah.
So on that note, I want to leave our listeners with this. Whether you're sitting in traffic and dealing with that suffering, or you got screaming kids in the background or whatnot, these words from Peter. 1 Peter 4:12 says, "Dear friends, don't be surprised when the fiery ordeal comes among you to test you, as if something unusual were happening to you. Instead, rejoice as you share in the sufferings of Christ, so that you may also rejoice with great joy when his glory is revealed."
Amen.
Until next time.
Thanks for listening. Salty Believer Unscripted is a production of saltybeliever.com. Visit the website to find more resources, like the podcast you've just listened to.